And today on our feature, of course, yours truly didn't get to make the University of Illinois Extension's Corn Soy Classic, so we'll try to get caught up a little bit. Joining us today, Dr. Aaron Hager, weed specialist with the University of Illinois and Extension. And Dr. Hager, it's been a while since we've talked. I guess winter months, not a whole lot to talk about.
Well, we always can come up with something here about weeds. If nothing else, we have a fairly good indication that we're probably going to have some to contend with again in 2015. We don't think we got rid of all of them in 2014, plus the fact we got a little bit of seed bank issue that we're going to have to work our way through again this coming year or so.
Well, and I guess as we look to this coming year, probably one of the things that I have ascertained from most agronomists that I've talked with, a lot of folks did not get some of those fall applications made that they wanted to. What's that set us up for in spring?
Well, really, we encourage people to continue to pay attention to, especially for the suite of winter annuals, is mare's tail. Now, that's a species that we really had a lot of concern with a year ago based on some of the levels that we saw in fields across a very large part of the state in the 2013 growing season. Matter of fact, I think that was our species that we spoke about during the 2014 Classic. Now, fortunately, for many people around the state, these population levels really did not reach the levels that we were very fearful that they were going to in 2014. And really, I think the thing that happened was how severe the last winter was. And I think we probably, the mortality of a lot of that fall emerging mare's tail, they were probably winter killed, so mortality was fairly high. All that being said, our hope is, and we've reminded folks about it already this year, you know, don't take your eyes off of that species, especially in the scenario you just mentioned where maybe there was the intent to try to do something in the fall, but yet that, you know, for whatever the reason, we didn't get those fields treated. Mare's tail more than likely will be around again this year. It can really blow up on us, so to speak, in a relatively short period of time. So if we, you know, scouting early in the year, if it looks like we've got some mare's tail, especially in fields that are going to soybean and no-till, probably would be a really good idea to try to get those things treated, you know, sooner rather than later.
Well, that's what the next question was going to be. How soon, of course, we don't, that weather is the determining factor, but
sure.
How soon in a normal year would we start seeing these to reemerge, and then potentially when should they be sprayed?
If the ones that are still behaving predominantly as a winter annual, they've already emerged. They would have been the ones that came up last fall, so they're still there. So really what we would try to focus on, and typically the mare's tail plants that overwinter are the ones that are more difficult to chemically control in the spring than plants that may emerge in the spring of the year. So typically, most of the plants, again, behaving as winter annuals, they're already going to be emerged. Really, the suggestion would be not necessarily just based on the calendar, so to speak, but when the conditions are good. So if we get a period, maybe a couple of weeks of some pretty decent air temperatures where it looks like things may be starting to want to green up a little bit, those would be really good opportunities to try to treat the mare's tail because, you know, they're going to be actively growing. They're going to be able to take up the herbicide fairly effectively.
So, and that would probably not be at a time where someone might want to put any residual in with it?
It probably would be a little bit early for that. The simple fact of the matter is that one shot passes anymore in soybean fields, those being something with burndown and residual right around the planting time. Those are going to be the ones that tend to have the most inconsistency controlling the mare's tail. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, but really we think the more consistent approach would be if we didn't do something in the fall to try to catch these populations early. Now, that may mean, you know, giving up a day somewhere of spraying corn herbicides, but rather than wait and let these mare's tail get larger size, which makes them more difficult to control, if we could target these plants when they're still small early in spring, come back with the remainder of the residual herbicide closer to planting time, I think ultimately that's going to be our most consistent way to try to keep these things under control.
Well, as you mentioned there, if they, the weather doesn't permit us to get out there and get it done, they get a little larger. Do you use a combination of products to try and take care of them?
That's going to be the more consistent way to go simply because of the occurrence now and more of our populations of mare's tail. We simply can't control them with glyphosate anymore. We have quite a bit of resistance in our populations around the state. So combinations with either 2,4-D, dicamba, other herbicides like Sharpen, for example, even some metribuzin in the burnout, all these things are really going to be needed to try to control the mare's tail and certainly become critically important if we, for whatever the reason, simply can't get in to treat these fields until, again, we're closer to that time of soybean planting.
Well, you mentioned, of course, a lot of this in no-till, but there are certain instances where people will do some tillage. There again, let's just say a one pass with a field cultivator and some bean stubble, even going to corn, will that do a pretty good job of taking them out?
It's so important, Roger, what the soil conditions are when we do this. If we're not too terribly wet, if the soil is in pretty good tilth already, a lot of times one pass may be all that we need. But in many other cases, we've seen if we get into a little bit of later into the growing season or into the planting time, folks get a little bit nervous. Maybe we're working fields a tad bit on the wet side. One pass of a tillage tool can really create some good significant headaches for us later in the year, especially if we don't adequately kill those plants that are out there at that time.
And already, of course, looking at various chemical plans, personally doing that a little bit, some are suggesting, depending upon what you're growing, whether it's a traited bean or a non-traited bean, some of the residual products, okay, if you're going to use glyphosate, you can maybe cut back on some of the residual rate. Wise thing to do?
No, absolutely not. Our message has really been very, very consistent since clear back in 2008, when we really started to see these challenges of glyphosate resistance in our water hemp populations especially. If we can go back and look at these recommendations on residual herbicides, it's always been you need to use the labeled rate for that particular soil type and organic matter content. Reducing the rates of the residual herbicides is going to lead us down more challenging pathways than what we really need to go on. It's very, very important because as we see more and more populations of water hemp and palmer that are resistant to many of the foliar applied herbicide options that we have to control it, you know, the simple fact of the matter is in a Roundup Ready variety or a non-GMO variety, we've got more and more populations once the water hemp comes out of the ground. We don't have a chemical option to control it anymore. So really what we're trying to do is, you know, folks need to remember the most competitive weeds are the ones that come up closer to the time that the soybeans come up. And so if we're using very low rates of residual herbicides, typically the plants are going to emerge sooner in the growing season than they would if we were using closer to those labeled recommended rates. So we'll extend the residual control out later into the year. We know the water hemp eventually is going to pop up, but the amount of yield loss that we would suffer if we can't control these populations after they come out of the ground is going to be much less than what it would be with those populations or if those water hemp plants emerge very close to the time that soybeans come out of the ground.
With that in mind, are the residual products available on the market today still fairly good in controlling water hemp and palmer?
Many of these things are. Many of the soil-applied PPO inhibitors tend to be ones that give us the best level of control, the longest duration of residual control in the soil. But one thing we talked about on the classics, a lot of folks sometimes come up to us and say, you know, why are these things resistant only to the foliar-applied PPO inhibitors, things like the Flexstars and the Cobras? And the fact of the matter is they're actually resistant to both the soil applied and the foliar applied. So what we tried to explain was why does it appear that we can still maintain several weeks of residual control with the soil applied PPO inhibitors given the fact that these populations are resistant. And really the take-home message is that we're using these materials at rates that are so much higher because we're trying to get that residual control. We're trying to extend the half-life of these materials later into the growing season, and these higher rates really are able to overcome the PPO resistance mechanism in these very, very small plants. Once the plants emerge and we try to treat a 4 to 6 inch tall PPO-resistant water hemp with something like Flexstar or Cobra, we're not going to do a very good job with it. So it's not that we're not selecting for further resistance to PPO with the soil applied. We actually are. But as long as that mutation remains consistent in these populations that allow them to be resistant to those PPO inhibitors, we know we can still effectively use these products and still maintain several good weeks of residual control. Again, another reason why we're really gun-shy about folks using reduced rates of these materials.
So as we look to the spring, I know there's a lot of soybeans, at least in this area, are put in a conventional tillage, so to speak, scenario. When would be the best time to, if, I mean, obviously the recommendation is still, whether you're using a glyphosate-resistant bean or whatever, use the residual. When's the best time to get that on? Just right, maybe post-plant, pre-emerge?
Well, there's a lot of pluses and minuses regardless of the timing of application. Typically, if our target species are some of these pigweed populations that can germinate and emerge much later in the growing season than several other species, the general recommendation has always been to try to make those applications maybe within, let's say, 7 to 14 days at the most before we think we're going to be able to plant any particular soybean field. The earlier we put the materials out on the ground, the higher the probability that we're going to get the rainfall that we need to move these into solution, especially if we're not going to mechanically incorporate them. On the other hand, the greatest duration of control would be from those applications that occur very, very close to planting time or even after planting time. But again, those would be a scenario if we've got the seed in the ground and we spray over the top of it. We don't really have that option to mechanically incorporate that herbicide if we don't get that rainfall within about the seven or 10 days after that application. So again, you know, trade-offs either way that you look at it.
No doubt what makes farming so interesting.
Yes, exactly.
Well, as we look back at last year, you mentioned, of course, the mare's tail, not the issue we thought it might be. Mm-hmm. How did we fare across the state in terms of particularly the Palmer amaranth?
Well, we found more populations of it as we were suspicious that we would. I think we probably ended up adding about 6 to 8 additional counties in the state where we have been able to confirm that one or more populations were found in those areas. The last two, I can't remember both of them, but I know one was Henry County in the northwestern part of the state. So again, it's not necessarily restricted to any particular geography around the state. Of 102 counties right now in Illinois, we're up to about at least a third of them that we do know now. We've been able to confirm that that Palmer is present in those.
And in all cases, are they all resistant to most of the post-applied products?
What we've been able to determine so far is that most of the samples that we have been sent that we've used some molecular markers to identify, if it did turn out to be Palmer, we also ran an additional set of markers on it for resistance to glyphosate. And well over half of those samples did turn out to be glyphosate resistant. Now, that doesn't mean that the entire population, if the assay turned out as a negative or a non-resistant, that doesn't mean the entire population didn't have glyphosate resistance in it. It just so happened that perhaps just the one plant that was sent in for analysis might have been sensitive. Likewise, you know, if it was sent to us and it was resistant, that doesn't necessarily mean that the entire population was resistant. It's really difficult to extrapolate too far beyond just typically the one plant that's sent in for identification.
So in closing, any additional thoughts that you covered in the Corn Soy Classic in your presentation that I didn't ask about?
Well, one thing that we're particularly concerned with, of course, with lower commodity prices, a lot of, you know, inputs are going to be scrutinized very, very closely this year. The weed control thing is something where we've tried to tell folks, look, we really can't take our foot off the gas on these things. Everybody wants to try to do these applications as cheaply, as economically as possible. We certainly understand that. But we have to remember that given the challenges that some of these populations are going to present it to us, you know, in 2015 and beyond, you know, weeds are going to do in 2015 what they always do. And that basically is they're going to try to reduce the genetic yield potential of the corn or soybeans. So anything that we invest in tools or tactics to try to keep them from doing that, it may actually show up, you know, on the spreadsheet under the expenditure column, but it's certainly going to have an effect also on the revenue column at the end of the growing season.
So I guess as we go forward this year, the mare's tails, the Palmer amaranth, and water hemp still the let's say top of the list.
In many parts of the state, those will be the three to really keep your eye on. Depending on where you are in the state, maybe you're close to river areas or farther north in Illinois, giant ragweed is going to be a very important species to keep your eye on there also. And really, let's not forget about the other ones too that we really don't talk about near as much. But they, you know, velvet leaf, cockleburr, Jimson weed, for that matter, if they still exist in the field, they can still do damage to that yield potential if we're not timely in their management as well.
And again, our thanks to Dr. Aaron Hager with the University of Illinois. So again, those who attended the Corn Soy Classics, well, probably a repeat of some of the information. Those who don't, certainly maybe this will be, again, some indication of what we need to do going forward in terms of weed control, particularly in soybeans.